Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your hosts, John Crockett, Steve Fizz, and the Statesman.
G'day everybody and welcome to the Draft Doctors. I'm John Crockett and I am back from my expedition over to Western Australia where it was hot, bloody hot, that's for sure. But on my fact-finding mission, I did find out a Palmer is a Palmer over there and a schooner is certainly a schooner. So all is right in that part of Western Australia. And before I did leave, I did say I was going to do a trek over to Domain Stadium. But as I was walking up to it, I noticed there was barriers about 50 metres out from around the ground, so I could not even get close to it. But I did find some interesting stats online about the size and shape of the ground, gents. It's actually 165 metres long and 130 metres wide, which is actually 10 metres shorter than Subiaco right now and 8 metres narrower. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Perth teams are going to play it on the new stadium there. And as always, we welcome Stevie Fizz. How you doing, pal?
I'm doing really good, Jono. It's a very exciting time of the year in Frankston. You know when you're playing in your league and on Tuesday the waivers go through and you have a look and you see who people have dropped, and every now and again, you drop your spuds who haven't worked out, and you see sometimes that people put in a bid for them and they're picking up your trash and you have a bit of a laugh about it. Well, it's that time of the year again in Frankston where it's hard rubbish.
Yeah.
And I'm watching people pick up my discards. They're scabbing the piles. We know, I think it was this time last year, didn't we have a Statesman on and we got the news that they don't have hard rubbish in Tasmania, but it's a fantastic time of the year to drive along and laugh at all the scabs.
I think I mentioned that we just put a spit and polish on it and it's an antique and you pay over $1,000.
That's a Victorian move, yeah.
So what would you call that three-burner barbecue that's missing the plate on there? Just an ornament of the Frankston backyard.
It's a fixer-upper. That's what Mrs. Fizz refers to me as.
It's a work in progress, that's for sure.
That's right.
And judging by what I'm looking at, it's just a blacked out figure, like one of those what would you call it, witness protection people on a current affair. But there is a nice mountain backdrop. We welcome you, Statesman. Looks like the weather's great there in Tassie.
Absolutely beautiful today, there's no doubts about that. Another ripper coming tomorrow, so it's absolutely wonderful. Enjoying a Pinot as you should while you've got a great view of the mountain. About 15 minutes from the CBD, I can still be outside because there's no traffic going past, gentlemen. It's absolutely wonderful and enjoying today.
But on today's show, we are talking first round strategy and those players who we're going to be looking at, that all important first round pick that we have in our drafts. Just going to be a bit of a round table discussion, but first, a bit of news coming out this week. We've got the 2K time trials, gents, with the 1 to 4 year players, and it's come out with Collingwood's one came out on Monday, and Tom Phillips won that one quite easily, ahead of Josh Smith and James Aish coming third. So we all know that we take the 2K time trials very seriously because it means they're going to have a breakout year, and they're going to be high on our draft boards now.
And it's great to see James Aish is good at something.
Looks like running, and that's about it.
I'm pretty sure he's out the front of my old house.
Looking for that barbecue, is he?
Yeah. No, it's just a James Aish out on the street. You can pick him up.
Yep.
Cheap. Free. But I don't know if you guys saw it. They had the international rules against the Irish on Sunday. I had it on the background, just glancing over it every now and again, but Scotty Pendlebury, another broken finger, but this time on his other hand, but apparently it's not too serious, and he wants to play this weekend over in Perth, but I reckon they might just stick a fork in him and let Joel Selwood or someone play as well. But I did notice Dane Zorko at the end of the match just icing up the hip. I don't know if he just maybe copped a knock or something, but there's been no reports on that, but just probably just a corker you'd imagine on that. And Andy McGrath has come out and said he's training with the midfield groups, looking to get that tank up, so we could be seeing a bit of a split this year from defence and midfield. And Statesman's just throwing up his arms in disgust with that one.
Oh, just every second story is their form is greater than they've ever been. This is the greatest pre-season. They're running better. Everyone's trying in the midfield. Yeah, no, I don't worry. Don't worry about getting sucked in this early. Let them actually see them play before you decide which position on the ground they're going to be.
Oh, don't worry, there was about 10 articles like that with Darcy Parrish and just about every other first to 4 year player training with the midfield group. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens over the summer. But if you want to follow us on social media, you can do that by checking us out on Twitter, where we are at The Draft Doctors, or at Statesman33. Check us out on the Facebook and the Instagram as well. But we are talking first round strategy. We're just going to pose a few questions to each other, starting off with will Patrick Dangerfield repeat his top scorer in Supercoach from last year? Gents, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you'd have to say he would be the likely selection to do that, but I'm not sure he's going to average over 130. And the fact is that Gary Ablett Jr.'s arrival muddies the waters greatly for me, and not everyone in that midfield is going to absolutely blow it up. Like, I think he, you know, if you're in a Supercoach draft, yes, he should be your number one pick. But if he didn't repeat, I wouldn't be blown away if someone like Dusty or Bont or whoever took over.
Yeah, there's also the likes of Tommy Mitch as well. He only scored about 200 less than Danger as well, even though Danger was suspended for that one game. But you're not going to see three blokes average 130. You saw Titch and Dusty go about the 120 mark. And look, Danger only had two games under a sub-100. Titch had two as well, but Dusty had five less than 100. So I can actually see Dusty taking that mantle in 2018.
Yeah, I don't really have a problem with that. You know, we saw Danger spend a lot of time forward. You know, I just think he's such a... I mean, if he finished outside of the top five, I'd be in Supercoach, I'd be horrified. Like, I'd be blown away. Like, that just shouldn't happen. But, you know, if you're drafting one of these other guys like Dusty or Fife or Bont or even Titch, like you mentioned, then you're banking on them being in that top five, whereas they just don't have the history over the last couple of years that Dangerfield does. So I just think it'd be probably silly to draft someone else. If someone else had a better average, that's totally within the realms of possibility. What do you think, Statesman?
Yeah, well, after last season, it's hard to say no, but I agree with you, Mr. Fizz, where I'm just a little bit worried about the Ablett factor and don't know the outcome of that. But to be fair, if you've got number one pick in a super coach draft, you're not going to go wrong by picking Paddy Dangerfield. So I reckon you just bite the bullet. Last 2 years, he's been the leading scorer. So the evidence says that he should be able to do it again without too much dramas. When we go through the subjects or the discussion points a little bit later in the show, I suppose I will discuss the ruckman. There's a scoring issue that's come over the last couple of years where I think it might be this year where the hitouts to advantage is actually scoring lower. So ruckman used to be that prime thing. So Nick Nack coming back could have been worthwhile in the old scoring format of being a number one. I don't know if ruckman can do it again. So then you look through the mids. Patrick Dangerfield and Ablett and Pendlebury, I would say, are the three top scorers over the past 6 to 7 years. Pendlebury, injury, getting older. Ablett, certainly in his last couple of years. So Patrick Dangerfield's clearly number one to me.
Yep, no, so we're all in agreement on that one. Gents, Tom Mitchell, is he worth the number one pick in your Ultimate Footy and Dream Team formats?
The answer is yes. So if we talk about the keeper, if you remember the formula I did before pre-season. So with the formula that we had where he had that coach that seemed to interrupt his career, he was clearly the number two keeper in the formula. So actually looking at this year, and Lachie Neale was actually ahead of him. So if you look at their 2 years and you add that into the formula, then Tommy Mitchell is so clearly ahead the number one in a keeper, let alone on a regular season or just a one-season draft. So I would expect him not to break the record year in, year out, but I think we've seen where his ceiling is, and I think he'll keep within 5 to 10 points of that probably the next 6 years, and expect him not to be out of the top three scorers for that time. So whether it's a keeper or a season, I think in a dream team style scoring draft, that Tom Mitchell should be your number one.
Yeah, quite easily. You just see that consistency, as you said, and ceiling is much better than that of Dangerfield and Neil.
Yeah, and I'll even go one step further and say, look, he's got an incredibly high floor. You know, he's got an incredibly high ceiling, but he also didn't have Bryce Gibbs come into his midfield. He didn't go to Port Adelaide like everyone else. He didn't have Devin Smith or Andy McGrath come into his midfield. So I'll also look at the other top scorers in your dream team format, and their situations didn't exactly get rosier. So I think you've got to weigh that up as well.
Would you consider Dusty being up there as a top scorer in the dream team format, or just don't think he's quite...
Yeah, I would. If you wanted to pick Dustin Martin, I think you're doing it because you really enjoy watching him play. And is he going to be a couple of points behind Titch by the end of the year in average? Well, if you lose 2 points a week, big deal. Okay, I'm not going to have a big problem with that. Some people have their favourites. But if I was not going to choose Tom Mitchell, I'd probably look to a Sam Doherty, to be honest.
Fair enough. And speaking of Dusty Martin, do you think he is worth the first pick in either format?
He's probably not, but if you wanted to do that, I wouldn't have a problem. But I think it was Statesman. You were talking about the Brownlow outlier year. Do you see him backing that up? I mean, he's such a good player. They didn't make any big additions to the team. Can he do it again? I think he can, personally, but...
Yeah, my actual response to the question, and then I'll probably answer a bit more in detail your question, Steve, was that my answer is no. He's not worth the first pick. He's definitely top five, but he's over 10 points behind the leaders in both formats, whether that be Dream Team or Supercoach. And it's clearly a banner year for him. So we talked about that Brownlow year and the scoring level, and we've never seen anyone actually repeat that type of level of scoring, whether it be overall total or average. So don't be disappointed if you end up with him, but there's better options available. Patrick Dangerfield, we already talked about, should be your first option for Supercoach, and Tom Mitchell should be your first option for Dream Team. So those two scoring formats, that's who you should go for. If you end up with Dustin Martin, you should not be disappointed, because I can't see him going outside of the top five in both. But I reckon his peak is a little bit below a Dangerfield and a Mitchell. He's not a true pig sense of the world, and he's not quite at Patrick Dangerfield's level when we're talking the Supercoach scoring. Brilliant player, no doubt. But his best ever year is still 10 points behind the leaders in both formats.
Do you say, even though you've said that the backing up the Brownlow year is always hard to do, do you think also the added pressure of the Tigers winning the flag, that more teams are going to hunt them, will affect the scoring in any way?
I never understand that. I know it's a bit of a theory for the, you know, want to knock them because they were last year's premiers, but that's over by round two or three, to be quite honest with you. So I don't think there's any added pressure. I think the Bulldogs showed it this year. It's actually themselves, not everyone else.
And no, fair enough.
It's actually that hunger. Do I think he's going to be a less of a player next year? Of course not, and I don't think anyone is. But there's a lot of things that come about. There's a risk for everyone for injury. We've seen that over the years. The end of the day, his banner year is his banner year. He's won a Brownlow, he's won a premiership. Very hard to repeat that feat, no matter which way you look at it, because you've got 17 other hungry clubs.
I'll just say this, like, if you... this is more my point, that you could draft your number one. Say you're a Richmond fan or whatever, you really love your Dustin Martin. I think absolutely. If you went that way, he's not going to cost you a league.
No.
No, absolutely not.
No.
I wouldn't recommend it, but I'm not. It's not going to. I don't think it'll cost you the premiership.
But if you picked him up in round two or three in a keeper draft, you should be very, very happy with yourself.
Absolutely. Moving on to the ruckmans now. Are there any ruckmans out there that's worth the first round selection in any format, guys?
No. Cold answer, no. We've seen it. We mentioned it last draft season. Draft your rucks late. No one's repeated number one. I guess the one thing is, if you felt like drafting Max Gawn in the first round in Supercoach because he has the most secure situation potentially, but just the injury history just kills him. And we see these ruckmen go down. They're so susceptible to anything. I'll throw out a little bit of a tidbit. If I had Jared Witts in a keeper, I would really consider trading him now at peak value. But I don't think there's anyone worth it in a redraft, no.
Supercoach has some possibilities with the old scoring format. With the new scoring format, it has none. That's the reality. So when you're talking about Dream Team, I totally agree with Steve's point. So really, get Kelly, get Danger, get Titch, get Dusty and co. first before you even consider a ruckman, because there's so much value that drops late, and we talked about it around 20-odd and Cruisers popped up. That's just the sort of value you can actually get in a draft.
Yeah, and especially with Jake Spencer being delisted, you're going to get Cam Pedersen real late now.
Boom! Jack Watts is out of there.
That's it. Spencer delisted. It's all coming up Cam.
I was thinking, who's going to be this year's Cam Pedersen? And it's Cam Pedersen.
Of course. There is only one Cam Pedersen.
But if you are liking the show, please do check us out. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. If you've got a few minutes, please do take the time and leave us a review. We really appreciate it. And hit that subscribe button. We've got a lot of new listeners now over the pre-season as we're coming into. So hit that subscribe button. They get to your device each and every week. And also check out the back catalogue. We really appreciate your new listeners. So please help us out by dropping a review and giving us that 5-star rating on iTunes. But moving on. What pick would you consider drafting Sam Doherty next year?
That's a really interesting question, isn't it? Really, really interesting. I think this is a hot take, maybe, but I think you can consider him at pick one, but realistically, pick three.
My answer is pretty simple. Never pick him. And if you make that mistake, trade him, and you may very well win the premiership.
But what about a one-year league, not a keeper league?
Yeah, I think it's. I'm a little bit worried. Now I know Carlton have brought in a couple of young midfielders with potential, but are they long, or are they people that are going to get a lot of time in the guts, especially in the first couple of years, or are they going to be more the flanker types? So Doherty spent a lot of the time in the midfield this year, and they had Bryce Gibbs. So in the second half of the year, I would say that he spent as much time in the midfield as he did in defence. So, and what we found, his scoring in defence was well over 110, but his scoring in the midfield was actually under 100. So he got more 90s playing in the midfield than he did playing in defence, playing that sweeper loose. I'm also a little bit worried of whether he ends up becoming a Hibbard. And I mean a Hibbard in the scoring type, because he's that sweeping, loose ball marking sort of defender for Melbourne and previously for Essendon. Are they going to start paying a little bit more attention to Sam, that he doesn't get as much time and therefore only gets to become an 80 to a 90 scoring defender? I would suggest that this year is his banner year. I do not believe that type of scoring is sustainable, and I've made the biggest mistake in history if it is. I don't think it is. I think he's a quality player. I think he's going to continue to get a fair bit of the footy, but I don't seriously think he's going to long-term be a top 10 scorer. But if he remains with that defender status, he's going to be very important for all draft leagues and all all forms of fantasy football, to be honest.
Yeah, no, Steve, you reckon he's a top draft pick. But another way of looking at it, if you're in that 6-8 bracket, you miss out one of those top five gun midfielders, that would be a perfect time to grab him, and then grab that midfielder on the way back is another option of looking at. So, yeah, depending on where you're seated in your draft, I can see the merit of taking him at the top. But if you're at the back end, look to get him in that 5, 6, 7, 8 position.
You're drafting him high. It's like you're trading him in high. So it's because what he done last year, not potentially what he's going to do next year. And that's where you can be really smart with trading and look at players that maybe were a little bit down, but you know that there's a reason why. So I reckon Lachie Neal in one season drafts will actually drop down the ranking quite a bit, because he only averaged 100 because he came off a really poor preseason where he had, I think, 3 or 4 operations. I don't think his actual value is much higher than what he's going to be drafted. And vice versa for Sam Doherty, I reckon people are going to pull the trigger. If you pick him at 3, he ends up averaging in the 90s. Was it a good pick?
Yeah, of course it was. If he averages mid-90s, he's probably the number one defender, if not top 5. That's the point of it. Like, you are still probably getting... Like, Taylor Adams isn't going to be a defender this year. Like, that's not going to happen. Michael Hurley's probably had his outlier year. Like, I don't see a world where Sam Doherty isn't a top 5 defender. Does a gun young player just fall off a cliff?
Agree.
I don't think so. I'm with you. I think the scoring is unsustainable, but I still don't see him falling
off a cliff.
I can't see him falling below 90. I can't see him falling outside the top, whatever you want to call it, top 5 defenders. Carlton's midfield's gotten worse. Hey, that's great for a loose man in defence. The ball's going to be flying down there all the time. They were the worst uncontested possession team, but they were one of the top mark teams. That tells me they are just chipping around the back line, not going forward. We saw it in their play. That is gold for a defender. Like you say, Lachie Neal's undervalued. I agree. I think he's one of the top 10 mids. But guess what? You could probably end up with Sam Doherty and Lachie Neal.
Yeah, that's very true.
So I don't think you've got any worries picking up a captain option in the second round. Like, Josh Kennedy's a second rounder this year.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the world we're living in. I think he's worth
Dan Hand as well.
Well, Dan Hand's probably a third round pick. Like, think about all the gun midfielders there are. Like, where's Adam Treloar going to go? He's not going to be in the first round. Where's Fife going to go?
Mind you, I was talking keeper, but a little bit later. I've certainly got Treloar in the top 10, but we are talking keeper, not just season draft.
Oh, I'm talking purely redraft here. Like, These guys just aren't. They're it's so heavily weighted. We're so recency biased. That's where we
absolutely.
We're at. So Dusty's going to be top 5 pick.
Kelly be top 10.
Josh Kelly's going to be a top 10 pick. Josh Kelly will go before Lachie Neal.
Absolutely.
For sure.
So, there's
I'd probably pick Kelly too, because hopefully on the back cycle I can pick up Neal as well.
But my point is, like, you're going to get Sam Doherty. You're probably going to get a locked-in top 5 defender. I like that. I think that's really good. I mean, we don't know who the forwards are, of course, so obviously it's a little bit hyperbole. I will get to the forwards anyway.
Well, speaking of forwards, Robbie Gray, probably an absolute Monty to get forward status this year in both formats. If he does get that the forward status, is he a first-rounder in Supercoach?
No, I don't think he is. I have a massive trust issue with Robbie Gray. Fantastic player, but just the rig. The rig's
just
not
the
so
rig.
Sturdy. It's not so sturdy. There's a bit of sticky tape on that rig. And the additions to the team make it really hard to see him getting full-time midfield minutes.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't have him as a first rounder, especially with averages of 111, 110, 108, and that actually dropped away to 91 this year. But we did know he was playing with some sort of osteitis pubis or something, and groin issues or whatever. But definitely second rounder for me. I'd be pretty keen as on a second rounder.
Yeah, I wouldn't take the punt either of the first two rounds, to be honest. It's his 12th season. He's starting to struggle, as we know, with the body. And I also think if their forms and they've recruited, some will say arguably very well, if their form is good, I would not be surprised if he's managed this year and have the long travels off and play a bit more home games as they prepare for the final. So why wear him out? Because he is a match winner. And that's the same as I consider the Ablett model as well, is make sure that they're both playing their best football in the final series, not, you know, round 15, 16. So I would stick away with people that I think are going to get decent breaks throughout the year. And 15 to 16 games is probably the right amount for both of them.
Do you still also think his recovery from that cancer scare might affect him? Or I'm not a doctor, but I wouldn't know what that recovery would be like. But it's also something to watch over that preseason as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Moving on now, just a bit of a question. Are there any players likely to start with the forward status that would be worth a first rounder in the Dream Team format?
My immediate answer to this is I don't think so. Although, as we know, there may be a surprise. I think Jack McRae was a bit of a surprise that he was a DPP, being forward status last year. So, if in form during the pre-season, the DPP in place, there's the possibility of Menegola. There's certainly the possibility of Sheed. Now, with the changes to both lists, I see huge upside for both players if they work out for them. So they might be first round picks if they're in great form and they're showing they're going to be playing in the guts, because points per minute both are absolutely sensational when they're in the midfield. And if they get that chance, I think that they are worthwhile first rounders. Although in saying that, they could be slipping to the third, fourth, fifth round. So we talked about this before, you're better taking the hot property and getting the bargain on the back end of it. So it's all debatable. It all depends what position you're at. My first immediate reaction is I don't think so.
Yeah, I've got two names for you that I think are unlikely, but if they were in the first round, if they were forward status, I'd probably definitely take Isaac Heaney if he got for forward status. I don't think it's likely, but if Steele Sidebottom came into the season with forward status, I'd consider him at the back end in the Dream Team formats. I think he'd be pretty worthwhile. The only other two names I could come up with were, I think if the forward pool is pretty light on, I think Devin Smith is worth a gamble. We know the injury is a possibility, but the midfield time is also a distinct possibility. And the scoring potential is, I think, it's pretty nice in that Essendon midfield if he gets the time there, and the forward line is looking a bit empty. And the other name I will throw out there is Rory Lobb, probably more for your super coach, but I think I'm pretty hot on Rory Lobb, to be honest. But as we saw with Toby Nankervis, sometimes those first time they play a whole year in the ruck, they can wear down pretty empty tank at the end of the season.
Just moving back to Steele Sidebottom, I'm pretty surprised there was no movement by Collingwood. I would have probably liked to see them bring another two or three midfielders into that club. I mean, they've only got 15, 16, 17, maybe 18, and who knows whether that's enough.
Well, haven't you heard Pendlebury's going to the back line to organise Darcy Moore and everyone else, so Pendle's in the back right, Steele Sidebottom in the guts. It's all
so
happy
half,
days.
Half the team in the midfield, the other half in defence. What's happening
and it's just,
forward?
Don't need to score if you cut off the opposition from scoring.
No, that's true. You only need a
0-0 draws. That's all we want.
Yeah.
I only had Isaac Heaney on my list as well. Steele Sidebottom, though, I'd be very interested if he did get that forward status again.
If Heaney theoretically did have forward status, where would you want him in a redraft?
Where would I want him?
Well, not want him, but where would you be comfortable drafting him?
Probably, he probably wouldn't go top first round, but I'd back end of my second, third on the switch there.
Really?
He's a sexy name. He's a sexy, and this is why I really like Menegola and Sheet. I reckon they're great value. You're going to get them much later than the names, and I reckon Sheet will score more than both of them, Heaney and Menegola, and I reckon Menegola's number two if he gets the role he deserves.
And you look at Heaney, he was coming off that glandular fever and still averaging those mid-90s, so he's up there, Toby Green.
Don't get me wrong, I've got the poster on the wall still. That's not coming.
I don't know how much value Sheed's going to be in your WA leagues.
Yeah, that's true. But who cares? No, that's unfair.
They're 3 hours behind, they're not going to hear this for a while.
Yeah. We're recording this at, 7:40, so good morning to our... just getting out of bed.
Moving on.
No, but you're right. It's a point that shouldn't get lost. If you are playing a league, just say we've done something with the OTLS boys and we're doing a draft league, then there's a huge possibility that they might overrate themselves, the Frio and West Coast players, because they are receiving so much media over there. I know not much media gets received in Bunbury, but I'm talking about the rest of the boys. So I suppose if you look at it that way, reading the people around you is really important. But if they go Sheet early, aren't they leaving out someone else that's of great value?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, I look at our league, Jono, and we've got some pretty passionate Hawthorn fans in our league. And I'm
Cyril, second round.
I'm forever trying to flog off Hawthorn players in trades and usually don't get it done. But we see see the Hawthorn players fly off the board pretty early, and, you know, you got to know your league.
And it's absolutely good to sit next to them, because you can, if you're looking at someone, you just go, look, Roughhead or Cyril or any Hawthorn player is still there, and they'll just pounce on it like a tiger on a bit of meat. It's great.
Like a tiger.
I remember that. That's the late show.
Yes.
Congratulations, Joe, on winning the premiership. Speaking of those friends.
And traded out Josh Jenkins for O'Meara too.
Yeah, but also traded out O'Meara for Brad Crouch.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Wow. Ooh.
There you go. Gentlemen, in a DPP change league, is Gary Ablett worth that first round pick? Is it worth the gamble?
Well, I should bet this one. I said don't draft him last year. I'm really hot on where Geelong is because of the Gary Ablett move. But I will say, I think that's more football than it is fantasy, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm also of the belief, there's a lot of talk at the moment. If you listen to Gary Ablett, he's saying he's playing midfield. I do think it's the coach that ends up deciding it. I think if the list management, the football manager and the coach all got together and said, what do you really want to do with Gary Ablett over the next 2 to 3 years? And they'll say, make him play 45 plus games. The way to do that is to have him up forward. So if you're in a change league and you believe that the club are going to do that correctly, I think he's an outstanding forward selection. But I also don't believe he's going to play enough games to be worthwhile to be first round.
And you could also draft him a bit early and hype it up, expecting that forward change, just like one of your Taswegian colleagues there on Brett Stanton. I was expecting that defence status to come for him throughout the year. We never saw it, and I don't expect Ablett to get dropped, but Stanton ended up getting dropped and playing out his career in the VFL, so I don't think you can draft for that DPP change to come.
And I think the lesson there with Warney's punt on Stanton is it's so worthwhile doing that at round 22 to round 25, where you're taking the punt, but you're not losing much. But if you give away a first rounder on a punt that they might get a DPP change, you're playing very, very risky. Because all you need is Duncan Menegola and Joel Selwood all to do an injury round one, then they're out for the rest of the season. Then Ablett's straight in the guts, isn't he? So all of a sudden, you don't get the DPP. So it's a huge risk, and I think that's the lesson learnt. And I was sucked in. I reckon I would have drafted Stanton in two or three things. He was training with the defence, God bless it. He played pre-season in defensive roles. It looked like it was going to happen. We all knew he was a ball magnet. So it was a good risk, but not a risk that you should be doing a first, second, third, or fourth round draft pick with.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I wrote the question, but I really struggled with an answer for it, which I guess is the point of the podcast. But my problem with it is if he plays forward and gets it, he probably averages over 90. But we've waited six rounds to get there. But if he doesn't get it, he's playing in the midfield and averages, let's say, arguably 110, which is fine. Obviously, he'll be in a better team than he was, but he also has pretty serious injury histories, although it sounds like the warmer climate of Geelong is doing his body good. But this is my point, is if he's going to average these sort of numbers, if he's averaging in the midfield, who do you want? Do you want Gary Ablett Jr. or do you want Zach Merritt if he's going to play midfield? Because I'd rather Zach Merritt. If you think he's going to get forward status, would you rather Gary Ablett or would you rather Devin Smith?
Oh, Gary Ablett.
Really?
Yeah. Forward, if they've both got forward status... I'll probably want a Gary Ablett because he's going to throw in a greater ceiling than Devin will.
Think about this. With Gary Ablett, you've waited to round six to get that position change, and then you might be rested for matches. So you might have eight matches where he's not a forward. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And if he's a first-round pick and he's scoring you sub-100 as your first-round pick, that is a losing move for mine. I don't think he's worth a first-round pick, but I think he's probably worth something in the first half of the second round in a position change league. But I understand if people want to pull the trigger, if you pick, say, eight, and you didn't want to, and you were really hot on him, and you didn't want to wait till pick 13 to get him, I would understand you pulling the trigger there if you thought you would get one of your target players in the next five picks.
And I will say I'm going to be in the same situation as I was last year, that I'll be saying don't draft him because someone's going to be hot. They're going to take him too early. They come with all the risk with the – when was the last time he played more than 15 games? It's quite a long time now. I can see the same scenario happen. Yes, he's going to score well. I reckon football – it's a great decision for a draft league. I'm again against the move. I think if really the second half of the second round's where he's most likely going to go or the longest he's going to stay there for, then I think you're investing too much on a 35-year-old.
What about in a league that doesn't have position changes? What round does he go?
5, 6, 7?
No. I reckon he goes earlier. Because there's a lot of romance about this. Yeah, he's a name. He's a big name. He can score really well. There's a lot of romance. A Geelong supporter's going to be jumping all over him.
Until that hamstring freezes up down there at HBMA, whatever stadium, and snaps. Alphabet Stadium, that's it. A question for our two ruck leagues out there. How many rucks would you take in the first round if you were playing in a two-ruck league?
I think I could see probably... What did I write?
How many?
I think four or five probably go, but I think it should probably be seven or eight should get drafted in the first round.
Yeah. I actually put some names down, and I may have missed one or two, but I also put the question mark, depending on the format, because they do change a little bit due to the formats. But I put Nick Nat, Gawn, Grundy, Steph Martin and Cruiser all go round one.
Yeah,
who am I missing?
Jacob. Sauce, Cruiser, Grundy, Ryder, Gawn, Nick Nat.
Ryder and Jacobs.
Yeah, and maybe Steph Martin.
Oh, I think you're missing Big Ben as well.
You don't think he falls off with Segler coming back? He was the preferred guy and Big Boy was just pinch hitting.
Yeah, I'm holding back on him because it is a 1 year comeback so far.
I think
probably
it's
want to see a bit.
Yeah, so quite a few. We are all in agreement there.
But it's such an advantage if you can have, like, even if you miss out on, say, Gorn and Grundy or in Dream Team, or Gorn and Nick Nat in Supercoach, like, having two good ruckmen, it's just such an advantage. But, I mean, honestly, if you're playing in a two-ruck league, stop playing in that league unless it's a six-person league.
Yep, totally agree.
Please.
And it's only because it stuffs up the strategy so much. It just controls. All of a sudden, you go two ruckmen, it controls the whole situation. Everything revolves around the two rucks. And I think that takes the focus off the game.
I think if you're in a six-person league, fine. That's probably good. But if you're more than that, which I hope you are...
But who cares about people that haven't got friends?
Well, you know, I don't.
We're a community. We like to extend the olive branch and welcome people.
That's right.
But thinking about it like this, if you've dealt with some wishy-washy players in your league, I'd rather have a great six-person league than a crappy eight-person league.
No, that's a good point.
And just finally, who would you take first overall in a startup keeper league? Who is your first picks?
Should be me, and I will say, you know, I couldn't stop at one. So I've actually put a quick look top seven. Obviously, I'll go through my formula, which we'll add another year on. So it's basically going to give us 4 years of history combined on, and we'll work through all that data a little bit later in the pre-season. But I went Tom Mitchell, number one. I went Josh Kelly, number two, and we underrated him hugely last pre-season, and those that picked him up in keepers did extremely well. He went, let's face it, he went rounds two and three. It's just ridiculous for keeper leagues. Patrick Dangerfield, third. He's just elite scoring and continues to do it, so you got to take him. Number four, Zach Merritt. Number five, Dustin Martin. And I can see, even though I rate number six higher than a couple of those, the reality is that's where he's going to go, so that's where you should pick him. If you're number six, you'll pick up Lachie Neale. And number seven, I've got Adam Treloar.
Didn't have Clayton Oliver in there?
No.
No.
No, he's only had the two seasons. He's shown some ceiling, but he's got some deficiencies in his game, like Matt Prittis has got, where he's a little bit handball crazy. So let's see where his actual ceiling is. And although he's outstanding after 2 years, I don't know whether he's going to be just break out and get the 117 like a Zach Merritt did in his third season. I'm not quite sure that type of scoring power's in him, but there are some damn good signs. Let's just say that for the time being.
Who have you got, Steve?
In your Dream Team formats, I'm in agreement with Tom Mitchell, and in Supercoach, Mr. Josh Kelly.
Completely agree on that one.
Yeah, I think it's pretty easy.
Since we've got a couple of minutes still up our sleeves, the fans love the list, Steve. The list. It's all about the list. But we've come up with top five favourite kitchen appliances that you like to use. Why don't you lead us off?
Yeah, look, you know, we all love a list. We all use kitchen appliances on a daily basis, unless we're living in a tent or something. I don't know about that. But, John, I'm going to start it off at number five, the mini chopper. The mini chopper is fantastic. Well, it's like, you've got your food processor, but the food processor, when you use it, it's got about 87 different parts you have to wash. It takes about three loads through the dishwasher to get it all clean. The mini chopper is like a smaller version of that. And as a dad with an idiotic small human, the mini chopper is fantastic because the small human doesn't eat steak particularly well, but I just mush it in with its veggies in the mini chopper, bang, you're away.
So it's like the hand musher, basically, that you...
No, but it's got a blade and it spins and, like, processes
Yeah, so, like, a hand processor for, like, mixing up soups and everything else.
Well, I guess that's the same sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Is yours cordless?
No.
Okay.
Why, have you got a cordless one?
No.
Did you just have a servant just doing it for you?
Yeah, when you've got servants, you sort of got more the up-to-date sort of appliances. So I was just asking, or whether it's used for other things.
Number four.
It's not a blender. It's not a blender. Right. It's a mini chopper. It's a bowl that you have a rotating blade in it and a lid that you push down and it pulses it. Number four, I've got the kettle.
Gotta have the kettle.
Pretty boring, but it does the job.
Hey, makes you coffee in the morning.
Well, yeah, I was going to put the coffee machine in my top five. I really wanted to, but to be honest, the coffee machine's a pain in the ass because, again, like the food processor, too many parts you have to clean.
Oh.
The kettle really requires...
That's why you have servants.
I'm a lazy man, statesman. Believe me, auto draft is looking good. Number three, the rice cooker. I love the rice cooker. I tend to make a big batch of rice each week and just have it in the fridge, and I put a cup on my lunch each day. The rice
Do you know who's the rice cooker in our house?
You?
Statesman.
Jeez, it's the only way to labor.
Cook. It's the only way to cook rice properly.
And mate, I'm a busy man.
Here's a man that eats brown rice almost on a daily basis.
That's what I do.
You've got to cook it right. No, that's what I do too, but no rice cooker. I see people come up with a rice cooker and they've got, so every little bit they've got their own appliance for. So you do that for rice, there's a fish cooker and a fish steamer. No. I'm sorry. I can't agree.
You got an air fryer?
Air fryer, there you go.
I've got a food dehydrator.
Oh, God.
Hey, look, the rice cooker. Look, Statesman, you know, you've got time down there in Tasmania. Up here in the big smoke, mate, it's go, go, go. We've got to be picking garbage off other people's lawns, all right, before they get the good stuff.
This is how you cook rice. It's a saucer or a
saucepan.
It's water and it's gas. Or electric if that's the way your kitchen works. That's it. You don't need a special machine to cook rice.
I'm with you, Statesman, all the way.
Unbelievable.
You guys, you cavemen need to evolve, all right? Anyway, on to number two. I think we can all get behind the toasted sandwich maker.
Oh, hell yeah.
So we're talking the toasty maker, not the toaster.
Yeah.
Cheese sandwich maker.
Now, can we talk about which is right? Is it the Breville, the one that closes it all in so you can have a toasted baked bean sandwich? Or is it the one that just squishes the two that melts the cheese into the ham?
It's the squisher. No, I don't like the lock-in.
Got to have the locker.
You open all avenues of different things that you can do. If you've never had a little bit of pepper over the baked beans and a little bit of cheese on top and then melted through and it's just locked, that goodness is locked
That's
in.
That's locked in. But just don't put tomato because that stuff will burn the crap out of your mouth.
I don't know why, but it's Breville. For some reason, Breville lock them in, everything else doesn't.
I'll tell you why it's the open one, and that's because you kind of avoid the burning of the mouth in one. Like if you put baked beans on it, that sauce will fly out, like will flow out the side whilst it's cooking, and you don't destroy the lid of your mouth.
Foreman shouldn't do toasted sandwiches.
Plus I can cook bacon.
Breville does toasted sandwiches, not George Foreman.
You just hate American things. How can you hate George Foreman?
I don't hate George Foreman, but
he's scared
if
of him.
You remember, everything he does is on an angle. Everything drops out.
It's like you. Everything you do's got an angle. So anyway, toasted sandwich maker. Whether you want it closed or open. But open's correct. And number one, it's pretty boring, but it's a microwave.
Gee, I would have thought you would have gone with fridge because it keeps the beer cold.
You don't need a fridge.
They stay cold long enough to require a fridge?
Mate, the amount of beer that I plow through that just sits on the counter, it's pretty unbelievable. But anyway, yeah, microwave.
Now, I'd like to hear the Statesman's upmarket gadgets that are his top five of kitchen appliances.
What's number one?
It's got to be the NutriBullet.
The NutriBullet is number one. Congratulations. Well done. Exactly right. If the man doesn't have a good juice in the morning, how can the man have a good day? That's what I say. Number two is just to confirm that everyone's having a good day. What do you reckon number two will be?
Coffee maker.
Correct. Kettle. The coffee machine. So the NutriBullet, the coffee machine, are my number one and two appliances for the kitchen.
And those are the only two you own?
And I'll make it absolutely clear, you don't need to have a special tool to cook your rice, to cook your fish, to cook your steak, to cook your vegetables. They can be all done on the same thing effectively, if you're smart enough.
A barbecue?
Correct. That's an option.
What do you got, Jono? Your house is full of weird stuff, and you know your missus bakes, and that's just a strange world I don't understand.
Which I don't use. Number five, got to be the kettle. Love me coffee in the morning. Makes my instant or my Vietnamese coffee, which I love. Number four is my toaster. I love my toaster when I have my Vegemite on toast. Come on, what have you got?
This is the problem with the toaster. Don't you find when you have, like, say you have two bits of toast, like I have like eight bits of toast. I can't stop at two. This is the problem with toast.
I got home
I've never got to eight bits of toast, to be granted, but I understand the point you're making.
See, we record this at 7 o'clock on a Monday, so I generally try to have dinner beforehand, but I was that hungry from work, I thought, I'll just have a couple of bits of toast. No, I had six bits of toast, and now my dinner's wrecked.
That's what I'm saying. You can't stop.
It's just, especially you've got Nutella, you got Vegemite, you got all sorts of options. It just wrecks your meals. And the missus is not too happy when that happens. But where are we up to? Number three for me, it is the microwave. I love putting in that microwave popcorn, a bit of salt, a bit of melted butter on it at the same time. Extra calories. I love it. Don't need this NutriBullet and fancy crap. Just give me all the fat in the world.
It's not... A NutriBullet is not fancy. It's just vegetables raw, buddy.
Well, there you go. You got vegetables and that's... I don't need that stuff in my life. Number two for me is the fridge because it does keep my beer cold. It keeps my meat nice and cold and fresh too. And number one for me, it's my slow cooker. I use this thing all the time.
That's decent. That's decent.
Yeah, the slow cooker's good. I've been confused by the hot weather. I forgot I even owned it.
Yeah, I forgot all about it. But yeah, just a nice beef ragu stewing away there on a Sunday arvo. It's quite good.
That's a good call.
I don't disagree with a good slow cooker. I don't own one anymore, but I lived on a slow cooker for about 2 or 3 years where it was just beautiful. You plonked it in, you went to work hard and come back and it's all cooked for you. It's beautiful.
Well, you probably upgraded to the Thermomix, haven't you?
No, I just got a butler.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Who needs a slow cooker when you've got a butler?
Living chef, just anything you want.
Yeah, correct. I'm ready.
I love that Statesman's moved to like a better place and I've moved to a worse part of Frankston. It's all happened at the same time.
It happens.
It really describes our lives in so many ways. Oh, God.
But that wraps up the show for this week. Check us out on the social media where we're on Twitter, at The Draft Doctors, or at Statesman33. Also, check out the Facebook page there. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Draft Doctors Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review.